What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer. And in this episode, take a trip with me to a fantasy realm of Japan as we help protagonist Lo Wing try to chase a dragon and fix all his mistakes that he made previously in my review of Shadow Warrior 3.
Marketing suits. Those idiots said we'd never be considered a big game unless we do this cool ultra slow motion trailer. The one where we zoom around, see all the rad stuff from each character.
Enough with the slow-mo. We don't have the budget for this.
Ah, fair enough. Roll the royalty-free classical music.
Quite nail that 2021 release date, huh?
Before we jump into the details of this game's story, let's take a few minutes to talk about some details that you may not have known about the game or its developer in The Breakdown. Gamers, as I was playing through Shadow Warrior 3, there was a few articles that I found online that I thought were pretty interesting with different pieces of information about the development of Shadow Warrior 3. And one thing that I thought was interesting to share with you is Shadow Warrior 3 is, as you'll find out in the details I discuss in my review, very much an arena shooter in the same vein as Doom and Doom Eternal that have come out most recently. And that is a complete departure of what the previous game, Shadow Warrior 2, was. That game was all about tactical advantages, using different other characters to your advantage, a massive open world, and all kinds of different types of gameplay options at your disposal. So I thought it was very interesting that Devolver, the publisher, and Flying Wild Hog Games, the developer on the game and the series, they decided to go in a completely different direction. Also, the production value of Shadow Warrior 3 was much higher than that of Shadow Warrior 2. You could just tell between the graphics that we'll discuss and other things as well and the details. So I thought it was very interesting that typically, yeah, sure, you'll see different types of genres or subgenres, aspects of those tweaked or added or taken away from different games throughout the course of a series. You look no further than Assassin's Creed to see that. But to see a complete 180 turn from the type of game and style that it was in Shadow Warrior 2 to what we get in Shadow Warrior 3, wow. Don't usually see that too often. Plus, honestly, don't know if I would have had the same feelings for Shadow Warrior 2, given what I've read the style that it is compared to what Shadow Warrior 3 is. So let's get into those details, and let's start with the game's story. In the opening scenes of Shadow Warrior 3, we see protagonist and hero Lo Wing in nothing but his underwear, wallowing around in his own self-pity, ashamed and frustrated that he apparently failed the universe by, at the end of the second game, allowing this massive, world-devouring dragon to be let loose in the realms of Japan. And the dragon at this point is just kind of flying around and taking care of its own business, and Lo Wang is, as I said, just wallowing in his own self-pity. But luckily for us, as the player and as the viewer of this opening cutscene, we're actually treated to a very entertaining opening explanation of what happened in the previous games. So we get to see the final moments of what led to Lo Wang accidentally releasing this dragon out into the wild, so to speak. And immediately, gamers, I fell in love with this character of Lo Wang. I had not played either of the previous games in the series. I knew nothing about the character of Lo Wang or the story or anything going on. I just thought the game looked pretty cool, so I figured I'd check it out. And as I'm sitting here watching this opening cutscene and listening to the dialogue that's being spoken by Lo Wang and watching the way the cutscenes, they're very quick transitions, kind of comic book panels in certain scenes allow you to see all kinds of different angles at once of, you know, the action, and there's slow motion. There is slow motion with love songs, which is always fuel for me to crack up over. I mean, it was a very entertaining opening cutscene, a way to explain the backstory of what any new gamers like myself would be stepping into as far as this world, the story, and what all's going on. So as you move forward in the story, you find out that the main antagonist from the previous game, whose name is Zilla, and he's this former corporate billionaire that was trying to take over the world and use that power of his money and influence to try to take over the world. Well, long story short, in this game, Zilla realizes that as much as he may hate Lo Wang and despise him, really, he's going to have to team up with him in order to take down this dragon. So we very quickly see Zilla enter the Wang Cave, which is what Lo Wang decides to describe his Fortress of Solitude. It's kind of his version of that, or even the Bat Cave, I'm sure is where the influence came from, because pop culture references are constant in this story and throughout the dialogue in the game, and I loved every second of it, loved every line. It was absolutely classic. So Zilla shows up and he is communicating with Lo Wang. It's like, look, get your clothes on, man. We need to save the world. We need to stop this dragon. We need to chase it down and we need to take it out now. And unfortunately, we find out that there is a mask that Lo Wang has paid very much attention to throughout the course of this cutscene. The mask is essentially representative of his former friend, a demon known as Hoji. And supposedly the demon's spirit was absorbed into the mask, but is no more. As we go through, that quickly changes, and Hoji is, let's just say, reincarnated into the mask. And there is part of the storyline is about getting Hoji his body back, and Hoji has a means for us to try to take down the dragon. And as we work together with not only Zilla and Hoji, but also another witch who's deep in the forest of this fantasy realm of Japan, Makoto, you end up meeting up with her, and there's this just hysterical raccoon that is kind of like her spirit animal and representative of her in that form. And that is hysterical, just leads to so many hysterical jokes. I just can't tell you how funny this game is and how much fun I had playing it because of that. And as you go through the story, these characters are essentially all having to work together to culminate in a successful ending to that dragon, is what the goal is. Whether or not that actually happens is something that you as the player will have to play and find out for yourselves. I don't want to spoil that for you. But I will just say that the story was just nonstop hilarious. And I could not get enough of these characters, their banter between each other, the lines of dialogue that were written for this, and the pop culture references just kept me on edge in a good way the whole time. So by the end of the game, I thought it was a great ending and a fun way to close out this game, and I hope that I very much see a sequel to what potentially is set up at the end of this game. And hopefully we get a Shadow Warrior 4 to see the further adventures of Lo Wang, Hoji, Zilla, and Makoto. So now let's talk about what my thoughts were on the graphics and sound. Gamers, as always, for perspective, We'll let you know that I was playing Shadow Warrior 3, the definitive edition, on the Xbox Series X on a 4K OLED LG TV Series C1. So when I first booted up this game, now let me just start at the visuals. And before I even booted up the game, I looked at the screenshots that were on display in the Xbox store in the Game Pass section. And I was like, man, these graphics look pretty solid, man. This is a pretty looking game. Well, I was in for even more of a treat than what I was expecting based on those screenshots when I did finally boot up the game and start playing. The very beginning of the game, it is obviously cutscenes, but once you get control of Lo Wang for the first time, it is this beautiful, gorgeous, bright, vibrant orange, yellow, red, blue kind of colors, because you're in this fantasy realm set in a Japanese setting, and it's just gorgeous. It's a massive environment. You can see as far as you can look. There's no draw distance, and it's just absolutely beautifully detailed. There is swaying leaves and tree branches. The grass is moving. The details within the wood and the planks that you're walking across bridges and the stone grounds and just different torches and lighting that's done in the areas. And as you're going through bamboo forests throughout the course of the game, man, this game is just absolutely gorgeous. There are different underground areas that you go through as well. And the crystals that give the light and the purple essence of light in those areas is just gorgeous. There is a certain point where you're basically on the, well, I'll just say the insides of a certain being. And as you're going through, there's massive blood cells that you're doing platforming off of, and just these different gas pockets that you're using to be able to propel you higher up in the air. All of this looks just absolutely gorgeous. There is different points where if you're getting near a waterfall, the different water spatter will get onto the screen. And in addition to that, when you are fighting all the different enemies, I absolutely love the design of them in this game. There are your basic enemies, the cannon fodder, if you will, and they are still very well detailed and kind of done in such a way that I understand why the developer did it. You know, maybe there's a blue colored cannon fodder enemy that is representative of having a barrel that if you shoot it and it explodes, it freezes nearby enemies. Or there's ones that are in red robes that have the fire barrels on their back, so on and so forth. But bottom line is they're still pretty well detailed. The really cool thing about the enemies in this game, though, is I would say intermediate to more difficult enemies are just beautifully designed and disgustingly so as well, some of them. I'll put it to you that way. The chef, you'll see what I'm talking about when you play the game. He's pretty disgusting, as well as the other, I don't even remember the name, but it was a pretty disgusting blob-looking kind of a character with these massive miniguns on each arm. And there was just legs and feet sticking out of its stomach, and just there was a lot going on there. But my point being, there was a lot of detail put into these design and enemy and character models that are in the game, and I loved it. I ate it up. I mean, when they do the cutscenes and you get zoomed in, because every major enemy type is introduced to you with a very cool, flashy, almost kind of like an anime introduction cutscene, and I loved it. And you get to see the details. And I mean, obviously, it's a first-person shooter, so you get pretty up close and personal with these enemies. It's not just shooting. There's also melee, which is very important in this game, and we'll get to that in the details of the gameplay here in a bit. But, I mean, man, just the detail, the level of detail within the characters, the enemy types, as well as the environments, it's just an absolutely gorgeous game. And I never had any frame rate issues. The game always ran buttery smooth. And this is an arena shooter, as I had stated. So it's going to be constant movement, constant just chaos going on around you. And it is very well done. To not have a single moment where there is frame rate dippage, I thought was excellent. So absolutely gorgeous looking game. When we talk about the audio in the game, I mean, I've already talked about the lines of dialogue, but they wouldn't hit or they would fall flat if it wasn't for the correct delivery of those lines. And I felt like the voice actors just nailed it in this game, especially Lo Wang's voice actor. You could tell the guy playing him was very excited and enjoyed playing this role. And if you read the interview online, I had read one that said that he was really kind of going for a version of Deadpool, like that, just that kind of vibe. And that's exactly what Lo Wang reminded me of as I'm playing through, with the quips and the banter and just very witty and quick with the pop culture references. I mean, it's just really, really well done by the voice actors in this game, not just with Lo Wang, but also Zilla and Makoto. And I will say that I was kind of annoyed a little bit for many different instances with Hoji's voice actor. I thought he was a little bit extra in the way that he delivered his lines. But at the end of the day, it wasn't necessarily bad. I just didn't care for the voice tone that was chosen. I thought it was kind of, it just came across kind of annoying and grating to my ears in certain lines that were delivered. I'll put it to you that way. But overall, it doesn't mean it was bad. I felt like outside of voice acting, the music was great and really set the tone for the game and the setting. Like I said, it's a fantasy Japanese realm, and those beautiful sounds of Japan, of just the different flutes and strings and, oh man, of whether it's violins or different guitar. I mean, it was just, it was very, very well done and very enjoyable to be traversing through this realm with that music in the background. And then obviously when you get into the arena fights and you have chaos going everywhere, it just, it ramps everything up and it's awesome. And then you have the big dong of completing an arena fight, which is always a beautiful sound to hear. So basic sound effects are also done really well. The sounds of the enemies, the grunts and groans, that was pretty basic, but you know, still good and fit the material that was there. And I can't really complain about anything visually or audibly except for the grating of Hoji's words and the voice tone. But also, I do want to say visually, it ties into this. During the cutscenes, the lip syncing was absolutely horrendous. So I do have to point that out. There was almost, it almost looked like the characters were puppets in certain scenes where their mouths are moving up and down, but they are not at all in sync with what the voices are saying and the words that are coming are supposed to be coming out of those mouths. So I thought that that was probably the weakest point, definitely visually, but maybe even game-wise as a whole, that Flying Wild Hog didn't take that extra little bit of time to finesse the lip syncing to make it that much more immersive of an experience. But overall, visually, gorgeous game, runs buttery smooth, and audibly, just an awesome sounding game top to bottom. But when I do my reviews, whether it's Xbox, and I talk about my Lucid Sound headset, or if I'm playing on PS5, it's that 3D Pulse headset. In this case, I played on the Xbox. So I want to talk to you real quick about, is playing with the Lucid Sound headset going to give you a feeling of being in a lucid dream? Or does it not make a difference at all and you might as well just be asleep? Let's find out. Gamers, no matter what game I'm playing, I'm always, every play session, it alternates between using a headset or the soundbar that I am currently using right now, which is one of the more recently released LG soundbars, which does sound great. But at the end of the day, I also feel like a lot of times you can get a different level of immersion if you are using one of those headsets, whether it's the 3D Pulse or in this case, the Lucid Sound headset. Now, for me, when playing Shadow Warrior, there was a lot of immersion that was added by using that Lucid Sound headset. I did think, first off, the soundbar was great, but at the end of the day, I don't feel like the sounds, the explosions, the sounds of the music, the environmental sounds, I didn't pick up on those as well as I did when using that headset. They were just a lot more clear to me, and also, if it makes sense to say this, separate. So you hear them separately, but as one, if that makes sense. And one thing that I like the most about both headsets or any headset when I'm using them, I love that directional audio or the 3D spatial audio to where you can hear the waterfalls running to your right or hear a grunting enemy running up to you from your left, explosions in the front or back. No matter what it is, you're able to hear which direction it's coming from. And it just adds a certain level of immersion for me that I love experiencing and having whenever I'm playing any game. That definitely is the case here for you when you're playing Shadow Warrior 3. And I did feel that the Lucid Sound headset was the best option for me when playing as far as a sound option is concerned. Now, I will say again, the sound bar is not bad, but I just felt like some of the sounds, the explosions, it just kind of fell flat. So if you're looking for the best, most immersive experience when you're playing Shadow Warrior 3, I highly, highly recommend the Lucid Sound gaming headset as an option for that immersion. So it absolutely was a Lucid experience. Now let's go talk about the game's controls. Gamers, when it comes to controls in Shadow Warrior 3, I gotta tell you that I didn't have too many problems. It wasn't a completely perfect experience. There were a few things here or there that I felt like could have been tweaked or changed, and maybe I could have gone in there and edited what the layout was for the buttons in the configuration screen. But I typically, when I do a review, I like to review what the default settings are and play under those settings. That, in my opinion, is what the developer intends us to use and play the game using. So when it comes to Shadow Warrior 3, obviously, as I stated, it's a first-person shooter. So you have dual analog control. Left analog stick is for your character. Right analog stick is for the camera. Left analog stick, you can click it in to sprint if you'd like to. And then when it comes to firing your gun, obviously, you have the R trigger. And when it comes to that left trigger, it's actually used as a dash option, which you are going to need to use quite often in this game. Again, arena shooter, you're going to have constant movement. So that left trigger comes in very handy, and I think is a good placement for that action. Now, when it comes to utilizing different functions of your melee combat with the katana that you wield, the RB button is what you'll be pressing in order to initiate those melee attacks. And those are basic, just kind of back and forth, cross cut, X motion slashes with the katana towards whatever enemy may be in front of you. There is no true lock on in the game for enemies, which, it's not a deal breaker for me, but it would have made the melee a little bit less cumbersome because you're almost kind of swinging blindly, it feels like sometimes, unless you are rushing right up on an enemy and you're just kind of blindly mashing the RB button to strike these enemies with that katana. When it comes to LB though, individually it is not used, but when you combine LB and RB, that is what initiates a finisher move. And these finisher moves are just awesome, really cool animated moves that once you fill up your finisher meter, one of two or three, depending on how far you are in the game, you can then use that to initiate this really cool scene. And I'll get more into the details of what that is in the gameplay segment further in the review. But LB and RB, click those together and you initiate your finisher if you have the finisher meter filled up. Now, when it comes to jumping, the A button is obviously the what I would consider the probably the most popular choice for any game. Most games on the Xbox is using that A button as the jump. And that is no different here. You double tap midair if you want to do a double jump. X is also how you reload your weapons. And then when the B button is considered, that is what you actually use in order to slide. If you are running or sprinting towards an area, there are some areas that are low cut and you can slide right through them. Or just in general, if you want to slide, you use that B button. In slower moving areas, if you're just looking to crouch and go underneath, it obviously is used to crouch. The final face button that you use is going to be the Y button, and that is what you press in order to use the grappling hook. And this is what will have you swinging around like George the Jungle, Tarzan, whatever you want to look at it as. Swinging around the different environments using the rings that the grappling hook will attach to get from point A to point B, as well as you can also use Y as a way to grapple towards enemies and pulls you really close, which you can do a quick melee attack or a quick shot with a close range weapon, like say a shotgun or something of that nature, is what I had a lot of fun doing with it. But those are the face buttons and what they do, as well as pretty much everything else. The only thing left to really talk about that was the issue that I did have with the game's controls is the use of the D-pad. And the first thing about the D-pad that I didn't really have too much of an issue with, you just press up on the D-pad if you want to know what your objective is currently. The issue I had with it was using left and right to alternate between your weapons. I personally would have preferred to have left or right be what brings up your mission objective and to have up and down as the options to cycle through your weapons. I found myself a lot of times throughout the course of play pressing up or down to cycle through, or even Y sometimes. Y in first-person shooters a lot of times would be to alternate between your weapons. If not Y, then it typically falls to the D-pad up and down in those directions. Well, Shadow Warrior opted for the opposite of that and chose to go with the left and right direction. So there was just a few times where it was a little cumbersome for me to get through. Once I locked it into my brain, it wasn't too bad, but I still would have preferred to have up and down as the directions that you choose in order to alternate between your weapons. So in general, I didn't really have too many issues with the controls. I thought the vibration functionality on the Series controller was really well done. I enjoyed it. I thought that in general, It felt very smooth and felt very, very well connected to Lo Wang as I controlled him throughout the course of this game. So in general, solid controls, just a little bit of question marks there when it comes to the alternating use of the D-pads. Now let's go check out the meat and potatoes of the game and talk about its gameplay. Gamers, as we now transition to talk about the details of the kind of gameplay that you can expect when you boot up Shadow Warrior 3, honestly, I've already talked a lot about most of what you can expect. And again, to reiterate, this is an arena shooter, meaning you have areas where you will be traversing a map, and you go, say, through a little bit of areas where there may be an environmental puzzle, like shoot this lock to access this bridge, or follow a trail of this electrical cord to a box that you have to activate. And there's three boxes leading to a centerpiece in the center of the arena that once all three have been activated, you can activate the middle of the arena, the main machine that you're trying to reactivate, or something along those lines. It's a very basic premise game and very linear. So you're not going to be sitting there going on side quests. It's not some kind of massive open world game. It's a very straightforward, very linear experience. And you have quiet moments. There will be a lot of dialogue that's spoken during those quiet moments of traversal. But you also have a lot of what I considered fun platforming segments where you're using that grappling hook to swing from hook to hook and from platform to platform. And even when you take out the grappling hook aspect of it, just jumping and double jumping and dashing midair is just very euphoric almost and just feels fun. There are also sequences all throughout the course of the game where you do wall running and parkour. And it's actually very, just again, exhilarating when you combine all these elements together. You jump, double jump, dash over to the vines that indicate that you can wall run or parkour on these areas or surfaces. And then you wall run across the horizontal surface, you jump, you throw out your grappling hook and you swing across this massive emptiness and then double jump into another wall run, so on and so forth. It's just really, really cool, and a lot of fun is the key word that I just got to keep reiterating throughout the course of the review. So it's a lot of fun traversing this world in Shadow Warrior 3, and it's a beautiful world to explore, as I had mentioned earlier. So you add those two together, and it's just a lot of fun. And to throw into that, each map, you have your quiet moments, but they always lead to an arena. And those arenas can vary in size. They can be smaller, mid-sized, or massive arenas. And they're all set up in different ways. They're usually multi-leveled. And that is where you have the massive onslaught of enemies that you're going to have to take out. And I mean, they don't slow down and they do not stop coming until you have killed the last one. And typically, if you see a lot of cannon fodder that are still lingering around, it's because you might have one or two more intermediate or above enemies that you have to take out first. And if you take out all of those quote-unquote prerequisite enemies, it'll eliminate all the cannon fodder as well. So you want to keep an eye out for those bigger enemies. But the thing is, you don't want to neglect the cannon fodder, because the way the game is laid out and set up, sure, there are different areas where you can regain health or ammo drops, but for the most part, these are only really found as you are in the middle of a fight in one of the arenas. And these are in the guise of whether it's red orbs that will refill your health, or if it's blue that'll refill your ammo. You also have gold that refills or helps to fill your finisher meter. And there's just so much going on, because the really interesting thing that I enjoyed about the gameplay here is it's not just as simple as you use your guns or your katana in melee to decide how you want to kill an enemy. It's not just that simple. You could do that, but there is a layer of strategy added to the gameplay and these different arenas, because melee kills give you ammo drops from the enemies that you kill via melee, and gun kills give you health drops from the enemies that you kill. So there's a bit of a strategy there. If you're running low or run out of ammo and the map's already pre-ordained or pre-designated ammo and health drops have been picked up recently, because they're on a timer. you go into the arena, the drops are there, but the first time you pick them up and every time after, there is a cooldown in between. You can't just keep going right back to them. The well's not constantly filling that quick. So you're going to have moments where you may not have the map drops, is what I'll call them, and you're going to have to rely on the enemy drops. And then you're going to have to decide in this given moment, it's pretty hectic, man. I'm low on ammo or just about out of all ammo, but I'm low on health. What do I do? Do I kill this guy with a melee attack to get me some ammo real quick, or do I get the health and shoot him with a gun? So it was very interesting for me to have that added layer of strategy to a given arena fight. So I love that. And in addition to just running and gunning, you know, I mentioned in the control segment about using the left trigger in order to strafe left or right or dash. And that is crucial in these moments because you're constantly trying to stay away. You don't want to get caught in a corner because the enemies will just flood you and just tear you up real quick. But the cool thing about it is the dash is not the only means of a quick getaway. A lot of times in the maps, you'll also have the different rings that you can use your grappling hook on to swing on and get away from the enemies in a quick fashion that way. You also, if you're trying to get up to an elevated area or to an enemy that's at a decent distance pretty quick, you can use that grappling hook if it's targeted in the area or right on the enemy. You can use the grappling hook to grab them and pull them right close up to each other. So you can do a pretty quick kill, whether it's melee or gun related. And there's just a lot of options on hand. You also have different barrel wielding enemies that I talked about earlier that affect the strategy as you're going through. If you have a bunch of enemies that you're trying to lure in a circle, because they'll all just follow you and trail you. So you can go to a certain area, lure all of them around. And if there's a guy with a fire barrel or an ice barrel on his back, you target that and it just affects all the enemies that are in and around you or around that blast radius. That is awesome. In addition to all this, there are collectibles that are in this game, and what they are upgrade orbs. There are two different types of upgrade orbs. You have character upgrade orbs and weapon upgrade orbs. Obviously, the character upgrades, you can have things like increasing your health a little bit or increase it to a point where you can regenerate health over time. It doesn't start out that way, so I would highly recommend, I always start in every game that I play, trying to focus on my strength, defense, and health as far as upgrades are concerned. But there are a lot of other cool upgrades that you can do for your character as well. There is a chi blast that you can utilize that will kind of a wind gust that Lo Wang is able to utilize and push back. In the beginning, only weaker cannon fodder enemies, as I've called them, but as you progress through the game, if you use or choose to use the character upgrades for that, you can upgrade that chi blast in order to push back more difficult or stronger enemies. And that comes in handy a lot too when you're fighting on a map or an arena that has ledges and you can knock the enemies off the ledges and get the kills that way. Kind of a quick way to take out a bunch of enemies if they're cannon fodder at least. And you still get the orbs for them because they'll usually pop back up right where they fell off the cliff. So you have all these different options at your disposal. And as you're going through, you're going to want to keep an eye out for those upgrade orbs. And the character upgrade orbs, they're purple. The weapon upgrade orbs are silver. And they're usually on the off-beaten path in an area that you're going through. And sometimes they're right in front of your face. I mean, the game doesn't, on a lot of these upgrade orbs, does not try to hide them whatsoever. They will be on the direct path in front of you that you're taking to get from point A to point B. So don't be too concerned with worrying about missing them. Now, I will say that I did miss some in my initial playthrough, but there was the majority of them that I was able to get just kind of playing through and seeing things. Even when they were off the beaten path, you can sometimes see that there's another route here that I can go on. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to end up with a character upgrade or a weapon upgrade at the end of that path. So a lot of options and variety here, but the bulk of what your gameplay is going to be that gunplay. And I got to tell you, I loved the weapon variety in this game. I think it had just an awesome style to it when it comes to the weapons, because I love the fact that, yes, you have a pistol, a shotgun, 2 submachine guns dual wielding. You have a rocket or a grenade launcher. You have this pulse rifle weapon. And, you know, each one of them felt extremely different. And I love the fact that there were different enemies, as it should be in this kind of a game, that were more susceptible to certain weapons than others. And I absolutely loved the weapon upgrades. They were a lot of fun and added a lot of just, again, layers to the gunplay. The dual-wielding submachine guns I talked about, you can actually upgrade them to the point where every bullet hit that lands on an enemy will add to an electric meter, if you will. Like it will electrify them. So not only does it stop them in their tracks, but the more successive bullets that hit them and the electricity is built up, when they die, it causes a concussive electric blast, which hits all enemies in the vicinity. And there's this ring that you see building out as the electricity is intensifying, and other enemies that just kind of blindly run towards you in that direction, if they walk into that ring, boom, they are automatically stopped cold with electricity as well. When you have the shotgun, I'm going to tell you right now, you can upgrade that to where it's an automatic shotgun, and that is absolutely amazing on some of the bulkier brute type enemies that you'll come across later in the game. So just, again, don't sleep on the upgrades, because they do a lot for the weapons and add a lot of fun to the game as well, in my opinion. So there it is. You have a very linear path that you're going to take from chapter 1 all the way to chapter 11. And along the way, you're going to have some cool, fun platforming in the guise of double jumps and air dashes, as well as combining that with grappling and swinging around. And it feels great. And then you're also going to have a few very, I don't even want to call them puzzles, but a few areas or scenarios like that, but also a few collectibles to look out for. But above all else, it's all about the arena gunplay and the melee and trying to figure out which in a given moment is the best for you. Now that we've dissected Shadow Warrior 3's gameplay, let's go check out the ship's chronometer to find out how long it took me to beat the game, as well as how long it might take you to beat the game based on your playstyle. Gamers, as I look at the ship's chronometer, playing Shadow Warrior 3 start to finish, I spent an entirety of 11 hours. But how does that break down for me? Well, for me, I did go after all 1,000 gamer score in the game, all achievements. So to get all achievements in gamer score, it took me that 11 hours. But to see the credits roll and to have played through the initial playthrough and just beat the game, I spent about 8 hours to do that. And the other 3 hours I spent backtracking through chapter select, getting any lost collectible upgrades that I didn't get the first time, any other challenges that I needed to complete in order to get those final achievements. Now, if you are just going straight through the game and you're looking to not really do any extra exploration or go after the upgrades or challenges or anything like that, you just want to play straight through the story, then I would say with the 11 chapters that the game offers, not every one of them even takes an hour to complete. So I would say you could probably beat this game between the 5 to 8 hour mark, depending on how quick you go through, how little or how much you may get stuck in a certain arena on a given chapter, or even there are a couple of boss fights if you get stuck at those for a little bit of extended time. But if you decide that, you know what, I want to go through and I want to try to at least get as many upgrades as I can, but I'm not too worried about everything, then I would say you're probably looking closer to that 8 hour mark. But like me, if you're trying to go for all 1000G or on the PlayStation to get that platinum trophy, then you're probably looking at no less than, I would say, 10 hours to complete this game. Now that we've looked at the time and the ship's chronometer, let's go check out my final thoughts and review score. As I sit here and look back at the 11 hours that I spent playing through Shadow Warrior 3, I gotta say, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I thought it was a really fun game. It was an absolute shocking surprise how much I really, really loved this game and just couldn't stop playing it, and thoroughly enjoyed the character of Lo Wang and just the different level design and that sense of euphoria that I talked about as you were combining all the different aspects of traversal in the world, and the arenas themselves were just all out chaos and just, again, the key word in this review for me is fun. And that's the best way I know how to describe it. The characters, the dialogue, the gameplay, it's all that one word. But there are a few things here or there that I thought kind of were hiccups along the way. You had some rough lip syncing when it comes to the voiceovers and then the characters on screen. Some of the controls I didn't really care for as far as using a D-pad up and down or left and right. I felt like they were back. I felt like up and down should have been the directions that were used in order to scroll through your weapons. And the melee was kind of wonky, you know, unless you were actually straight facing the enemy. It almost felt like every time you're just kind of blindly tapping RB and slashing and hoping that you're connecting, because there was no real vibration or sense of connection to the swing of the blade with the hit and no lock on. So a few design decisions aside, and looking at just a few other linearity issues, and I don't want to necessarily knock the game for being so linear, but I do think that there is an opportunity to expand on what the game has on offer and maybe a potential, hopefully, Shadow Warrior 4. But when it comes down to it, overall, everything else was excellent. I thought the story was fun. The graphics were great. The controls were pretty decent. And in general, it was just a very solid experience. And one that, at the end of the day, I'm going to give an 8 out of 10. That'll do it for my review of Shadow Warrior 3. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming, as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number 1. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.